Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening, good morning, good night. Good second breakfast whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And tonight we have a member of our community as a guest. We have Heather Green. Heather Green is a freelance writer, journalist, and editor. She received a BA in film at Wesleyan University and an MA in film studies from Emory University. She also studied film and theater at Cornell University and the University of Paris. She has written for religious news services, Turner Classic Movies, The Wild Hunt, Circle Magazine, Paseos.com, and other outlets. She's a member of Circle Sanctuary, Covenant of the Goddess, and the Religion News Writers Association. You can find more about her work at www.heathergreen.net. And I am so excited to have you here tonight. Heather, how are you? Welcome to Lunatic Mondays.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate coming on here and talking to you. I've been looking forward to it. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. And the first thing that I want to say before I forget, before it goes into the nothingness, is, Heather, you must take this to your heart because I'm telling you the truth. Everyone that I know, that I have told them I was going to interview you tonight, every single person has said, Heather is fantastic. She's great. She's a wonderful human. She's a great friend. So you must know that those are the little breadcrumbs of love, respect, honesty, and admiration that you're throwing out in the world. And somebody ought to tell you, and I'm happy to be the messenger. Every single person, especially, and I have to mention him because he was on our show a couple of weeks ago. He will come back next month, almost a month from today, on the 25th. Jaime Girones from Mexico. Oh, my goodness. He could not stop talking about you and how much he loves you. So, you know, I feel that
wonderful.
I needed to tell you. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm touched. And Jaime is wonderful, too. He's a wonderful writer, thinker, and he's done such a great job of bringing spirituality, Wicca, and magic from his home city and country. So, and I'm so excited for his first book to come out on the Day of the Dead. It's just coming out now, just being released, and it's so adorable, and it's so filled with such authentic information. And he was the perfect person to do it, right? So I'm so excited you had him on your show.
Thank you so
much. And I'm
so
touched, Heather, by everything else you said. Wow.
Well, yeah, it's true, no lie. Some of it was said on my coffee break this morning. And then the other part is on the radio, you know. It's in Spanish, though, but, you know. Anyway, I am very happy to have you here on the show tonight, and I have to ask you the first question that I ask every one of my guests, which is, when did you get interested in witches? How did you enter this path of nature-based spirituality? Do you identify as a witch?
Yes. How did I get started? Well, you know, it's, yeah, for many people, you can't pinpoint a time and a date and a specific, as far as I've seen. But I would say I started practicing or researching astrology and tarot in college. Although, you know, I probably was interested earlier than that, but just didn't have a name for it. I remember going to house sit an apartment in Manhattan with a friend, and we were staying over in that apartment. I was probably in college, and I had already started researching and, you know, sort of practicing tarot and astrology a little bit. And there was a little box, and there were little bags of spices in this little box that we found when we were staying in the apartment. And then we asked somebody who knew this person, and, oh, yeah, she's a witch, like, casually. And, it, like, wait a minute, say that again? is that a thing I could be? So it sort of opened my eyes, and I think it was after that moment I went out and bought Buckland's Big Blue Book and Marion Weinstein's and Sybil Leek's books and started, and that was just, it was on at that point.
That's awesome. And everyone that I have heard, you know, like so many people that I have the pleasure of interviewing, everybody says it's like coming home. You know, it's like, oh my God, like I didn't know this was the home that I've been missing to be part of. So the other passion of yours, of course, the other love of your life is film. So I have to ask, was there a moment or was there a film in particular that made you fall in love with film?
Not really so much, because film is something that I just kind of grew up around. And, you know, I have my grandparents lived in Los Angeles. I spent a lot of time there as a child, and I would hear stories from old Hollywood, from them. I remember watching old sci-fi movies with my dad, and he was really into movies, old movies. So it was kind of like just happening around me. It was just something that I knew about. It's something that I experienced. I had been on sets when I was younger through my dad's work, and I was already in theater from the time I was very young. So it was sort of, that's a close cousin, of course, precursor. And so with all of that, being involved in theater, dance, and performance art, and the experiences with my family and having film all around me, it just was a natural progression as I got older to actually start studying film.
I was muted, of course. I was trying to come back to you. So, of course, then you decided that you were going to write this wonderful book, Lights, Camera, Witchcraft, A Critical History of Witches in America, Film and Television. I'm going to take the plunge, and then we're going to go and break it down more in a better, more sensitive way. But why do you think, with your extensive knowledge of witchcraft, why do you think that people of color doing witchcraft in film is always depicted so badly?
Wow, that's a loaded question. You got a few hours?
Yes, I do.
Well,
we have a whole 42 minutes.
Well, it, there's a lot to be said about that. There's a lot of issues, and some of them are just so cultural, widespread, racism, widespread bigotry that's just embedded in our culture. So, you know, there's that. And that's really the bottom line. However, there's different depictions of witches. And so one of the ways to depict a witch or that they depicted witches in older Hollywood was to depict the witch as something that was not the mainstream audience, was not the audience they were trying to sell tickets to. And so you did that by depicting them as looking different or from somewhere that was not America. And so that's one of the reasons you see that happen, is that witchcraft is something that was considered bad, was considered not something we would do. And when I say we, I mean who the assumed audience was. And so then to do that, to depict it visually, you depict something that's not us. And I talk about this in the book. And when I say us again, to be clear, I'm saying whoever the perceived audience was, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Something that wasn't the heroine or hero, something different. And so what happens is when you have old Hollywood selling tickets to predominantly a white Christian audience, what wasn't them, what wasn't the hero and heroine, was someone that was a person of color. And it began in early Hollywood as the depictions were mostly Native American, indigenous people. And that slowly turned over to being mostly people from the South Seas, people from Africa, people from Haiti. Haiti was a big one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually that turned over to, generally speaking, people of color later.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the – it's not only in an embedded American social issue, which is the underlying condition, it was also sort of written into the code, the language of Hollywood on how to depict a witch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answered your question, but that's about as short of an answer as I can give to a very,
yeah,
very complex question.
And of course, you're not here about to talk about social issues, but there aren't so many social issues that are touched by witchcraft in Hollywood. But let me start from the beginning. What a wonderful book! I love it. I more than anything love. You I'd love hearing you talk about it. When I heard you talk about it so long ago, and how you talk about women's rights and all of these different surges of witchcraft film in different stages of our history here in the United States. So I have to ask the question, the burning question in everybody's mind. The concept of the witch with the green skin and the pointy hat, that is Hollywood, right? That was created for, was she the very first witch on film?
Well, the pointy hat's not Hollywood. That came before Hollywood. So the idea of the pointy hat, you can see those in drawings from the 1800s, depicting Mother Goose, depicting depicting all kinds of witches, fairy tale. That's the pointy hat came from somewhere else, okay? But the green skin's Hollywood. And the story behind that, and I love telling this story because it's one of the little tidbits I get into in the book, but it's one of the most important things that is misunderstood is why did the Wicked Witch have green skin? Was she the first witch? Was she the first witch with green skin? And the answer is yes. As far as I can tell, absolutely. At least in Hollywood, she was. And so why did she have green skin? And that's the interesting part. And just like I said earlier, some things come directly from Hollywood language, and this is the case. So you have Margaret Hamilton being tested with her costume on screen to see how it would look. And so they put this long black dress on her, the pointy hat, had her hair up. And they were doing this testing on screen with the new Technicolor, with the new technology.
Mm.
And when the technology, when they were looking through the camera, when they were seeing the dailies on that, it looked like her head was floating over her body. Like there was some kind of weird, like supernatural thing where her head was not connected to her body. And that was caused by Technicolor. It was caused by the technology of the jet black dress and her skin color. So the only solution to this, to make it look not odd, was to either change the color of her costume or change the color of her skin. They chose to change the color of her skin. So they made her green. And from that point on, if you look through, and I pointed out in my book, is that witches then after that start to have green skin. And that is one of the most influential elements that the Wizard of Oz, MGM's Wizard of Oz, had on Hollywood witches, as well as just witches, American witches in general, you know, because it's now outside. I mean, you see green witches all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And I not only seen green witches, but, you know, I seen the term green with envy also comes from that, I think, but I'm not sure. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if green with envy comes specifically from that. The green, the color green being associated with a number of different negative things is comes before that. Frankenstein was green. Monsters are considered green. You also have green is associated with being sick, green skin. So I couldn't find in my research the reason why they chose green, but my guess is the association to monsters, which were very prominent. Universal was making a lot of monster movies at the time, which were very popular. So I'm assuming they chose green for its relation to monsters, for its also relationship to a sickly humanity, a monstrous humanity. And I talk about that in a little bit in my book on how we fear things that look human but are not quite right, and specifically when it comes to the body. So green kind of relates. It's like a sickness or a monstrous humanity, similar to the Universal Monsters. So that's why I'm guessing they chose green. I don't know if green with envy, if I had to guess, I would say it probably came before that, but it plays into it. It's one of the reasons why they would have chose green.
And I just love it. You know, I love Hollywood witches, and I think they do not necessarily represent what we do now in the 21st century as spiritual, pagan, neo-pagan, Wiccan, or whichever affiliation one chooses to associate with or term identify. But I love the influence, you know, and to see all this, like, all movie, all Hollywood witches, and the difference between then and now. Why do you think these films with witches, like the old school ones, like Bewitched, or like Bell Book and Candle, why are those important? Are those related, do you think?
Bell Book, of those two particular ones, Bewitched?
Yeah.
Bewitched and Bell Book and Candle, well, technically, I would say that they're cousins in that the Bewitched people were aware and inspired by Bell Book and Candle. So often often people say that I Married a Witch, which was earlier, the first one, the Bell Book and Candle were actually remakes of the same story. People talk about that, and Bewitched in the next one in line, and that's not the case. They are actually not based on the same source material. However, they have a similar sort of sense, this sort of sense of a witch next door, this sort of sense of what if a witch lived in our world for real. You know, they kind of go with that kind of premise. And the creators of Bewitched did say that they used those other two films, those earlier films, as their inspiration, but they aren't based on it. It's not based on Bell Book and Candle was based on a play written in the early 50s. Bewitched is not based on that play, but it takes its spirit from the same kind of idea. It takes its comedy from the same kind of concept. You know, what if a witch lived next door? And in my book, I call them the witches next door, a witch next door. So you have Addams Family has a similar concept. Bewitched. Mm-hmm. Sabrina even has a little bit of that. You take this comedy from what if this magical person lived, you know, in the apartment next door, in the house next door, whatever, going to high school with you. It's the same sort of premise.
And talking about the Hollywood language, as you said earlier, you know, marketed to whoever is not, marketed to the people who is marketed and making the villain look like something that is the opposite. So then you have this witch next door or monster next door. Do you think that was a political statement hidden there too?
With the Addams Family specifically or with Bewitched? With the Addams Family,
with
absolutely. Yeah, and absolutely, and I do mention that in those two shows came out at a very specific time. And they were done in a specific way, and they're both allegories for conditions and things that were going on at the time. So, for example, Bewitched is really, you're looking at it coming out in 1964, just as the Cultural Revolution began, just as things were really starting to rev up in that way. And so you have this you have this show that goes from 1964 to 1962, as everything was revving up, as I said, that's looking at an interracial, interfaith, intercultural, whatever, marriage, essentially. And so that's what it is. That's one of the roles. It's a subversive political discussion. It's a subversive mm-hmm. political text. And Adam's Family is similar. Adam's Family is not an inter-whatever family. What it is, that Adam's Family is a family that's not, that's different, whether they're from a different ethnicity, race, culture, whatever it is, moving into the neighborhood, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like who's lived in next door. And so that's where the subversive text comes in there. That's where the socio-political aspect of these shows. It's an undercurrent in the comedy, but it's there. And the creators of Bewitched actually reference that. They say sometimes you can use comedy to hit socio-political points and send messages that you can if you do a more serious program. So they mm-hmm. did that with Bewitched, and they did it with Adam's Family. And those are two different creators, but they both were doing that. And you see that in a lot of shows during this period of time. But both of those did that, and they used witchcraft and witches and monsters, in the case of Adam's Family, as the platform or outlet to do that. And Bewitched also, just adding to that, also has a undercurrent of a feminist undercurrent as well. So you've mm-hmm. got a lot going on in these fun comedies that we just all love to watch. And then you go, wait a second, there's more to it than that.
Absolutely. Nice. Absolutely. So I kind of crammed two questions in one. So I want to reframe the other one that was really important. But I have to preface, of course. I love Hollywood witches. I'm going to go on a limb and say that you love them too. And I mean, you're right in the book. I do not have Laura Gonzalez. I do not have a problem with the witches that are depicted on the TV, because that does not represent me or the magic or the witchcraft that I do, especially me being a Mexican woman, indigenous women, you know, I don't feel represented. So I don't have a problem when they are ridiculously racist still, but as a practitioner of earth-based religion and magic, how important is that the rituals that they present on these movies are close or not to our real practices?
How important is it for them to be? Are you asking how important is it for them to represent witches, modern witches, properly?
Yeah, do you think any of that is real? I mean, I know it's not, but, you know, I have to ask, is there anything real? And how important it is that it's close or not?
Well, that's an interesting question, I think. You know, and it wasn't until the 1970s that you start to see evidence that Hollywood had any awareness that there was actually modern witchcraft. You have a little bit, of course, the lore existed. So it's a lot of the fantastical lore comes from elements of realism, but you don't really see it. You don't really see that kind of stuff until the 1970s. And in the 1970s, you start to see language text. There's lines in these movies. There's different elements, rituals, et cetera, that language that come directly from modern witchcraft books. They come from Buckland's books. They come from Paul Hewson's books. So you start to see those, and any modern witch, if they watch some of those old campy 1970s horror films, will go, wait a minute, I know that. They just said the word fivefold kiss. They just said blessed be. They just said, you know, so you'll see a little bit, but it's totally out of context. I mean, it's totally in the narrative of a satanic evil witchcraft stuff. So but it's there, and that's the first time you see it. And you start to see a little bit later where you start to see evidence of them, the Hollywood language starting to recognize that witchcraft could actually be a nature religion. And that, of course, starts happening after. For example, Circle Sanctuary has been established, and there's been some more books written and that have come out. It is until the 90s that you start to see more respect given and that's specifically to Wicca. They start to use the word Wicca specifically and start to differentiate Wicca with witchcraft. And I'm thinking about The Craft, X-Files, Sabrina, mm-hmm. Charmed, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So those are the key markers. You start to see it in shows into the 2000s. So you see an awareness of the growing modern witchcraft movement by the 90s, really differentiating what they have decided is evil witchcraft versus Wicca. Okay, so you see that delineation, which is good. It's not exactly correct, but it's at least better than nothing. And then more recently, you start to see more and more. You're starting to see evidence of not only witches are being represented more with more diversity in practice, in appearance, in all ways, but connected to folk practices, connected to, other positive representations of magical practice. It's not just Wicca anymore. It's not just this binary of bad witchcraft and Wicca. So it is there, and you have more and more modern practitioners actually on set influencing. Mm-hmm. And you see, again, I said the diversity of representation. Like you said, you can look at some of the old movies and you don't see yourself in them. That's changing. You start to see a much larger diversity in more recent movies where, across the board, in practice, in appearance, in background. More recently. And so it's a very good thing that we have representation to inform these fictional representations. They're still sensational. They're still fictional, but which makes them fun. There's some representation or more realistic representation on the diversity and the richness of modern magical practice that we have today.
I call me mischievous if you want. Mischievous. I'm learning. Call me mischievous if you want. But I kind of like that they're still not accurate. And I kind of like that they still, there's still this like mystery and fear of, oh my God, you're a witch, you know? I mean, and I don't have a problem with it, when people say like, oh, you worship the devil. Maybe. Anyway, it sounds like we both need a little bit of drink of water. And speaking of representation matters, that is for sure. I have a song for us to take a little break, Heather. It's called La Bruja from a Colombian group called La Perla. And it's a really fun song. And I invite you all to listen. And then when we come back with more, we will find out why are witches so interesting for Hollywood. So don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back with more here on Lunatic Mondays.
Salía de noche por como
And we're back here live on Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And I always say the first because there are two. And yours truly, I produce the second one with collaborators from all over the world. And it is also a bilingual show. It's called Paganos del Mundo. It's in Spanish and Portuguese, and it airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Central. But the fun here in CSMP don't end there, because we also have two shows with our senior Reverend Selena Fox. She has Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality on both Sundays and Wednesdays. And two Tuesdays a month, we have Circle Talk with Deborah Rose. And two Thursdays a month, we have Moon Magic with David and Janet Even. So there are over 500 hours, or even more, of podcasts that you can listen to, download, share, or keep for your archives. And they're all free. They're all for free. So please join us and spread the word about Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. We are only like a 2 years old podcast, but we're going to be talking about global voices of paganism, women's and paganism at Parliament of the World Religions. So that is going to be really interesting. It's pretty cool. But enough about the station. Thank you all for staying here. And I'd like to welcome Heather Green back again. How do you like that song? Isn't it fun? I like it. I love it.
That was fun. That definitely was. I'd never heard it before.
Yeah, no, I heard this song. I watched the video on YouTube, and I contacted the women on the group, and I said, can you please let me play this song, because I love it. And it breaks a lot of stereotypes of why women, at least in Mexico, Central and South America, and even here in the United States, you know, we are called witches because we speak about our rights and we want to do things our own way. So that's why we're called brujas, you know, witches, which is brujas, witch on Spanish. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I have to ask you, you know, why is the witch so popular? Why is the witch so important in film?
Well, I think that's there's a couple reasons for that. There's more than a couple reasons for that. Speaking specifically for Hollywood, that the attraction to the witch has been there's been a number of reasons. I mean, number one, Hollywood needs to sell tickets. So ultimately, in some cases, the attraction to doing witch films had to do with that. For example, in 1970s, when sensationalist films were really popular, witchcraft, which was becoming something of the counterculture, it was something that was going on. It was satanic. It was strange. It was different. It was something that was very wrapped up in that. They were selling tickets because people were into it. And the same again in the 90s, for example, or even in the 80s during the Satanic Panic. So there's a lot of different reasons. But one of the things that keeps coming back over the years in Hollywood language is that the witch is not truly representing the witch in that practitioners know it as. Modern practitioners, this is not really what Hollywood was doing since its beginning. The witch in Hollywood language essentially is an allegory for women and women's power. And so depending on how that power was being assessed in culture, in society at the time, was then used by Hollywood to tell a story of a woman's condition, a woman's place, or where she should be or shouldn't be. And so you see that replicating throughout. You also see the fact that witches appear, especially in early times, only when a genre is popular, because the witch herself, again, people weren't necessarily interested in modern witchcraft and magical practice. They were more interested in the stories. And if the story happened to be, if they were interested in fantasies and that was what was popular, Hollywood would do it, they'd include the witch because the witch was something interesting. And it was also, again, a representation of women and what not to be, and that was something of interest as well. So there's multiple reasons. It's like I said, there's layers.
I cannot wait until the next generation of films comes through, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but I have the privilege of living in two different worlds. I speak Spanish and I speak English, and that gives me a unique perspective. And as I was telling you earlier with the song, a lot of women in all of the America, North, South, and Center, America, the continent, are coming into their power, and they are using goddess as an emblem, not as a spiritual being like most of us pagan, neo-pagan, Wiccan, or witchcraft practitioners see goddess as a deity, but they are using goddess as a concept, power of freedom, of diversity. And because of that, a lot of women and people of other genders are calling themselves witches. And I cannot wait until Hollywood gets a wind of that. And then they come up with some amazing movies, you know, about the women in all Spanish-speaking America, you know, are doing their thing as witches. I also wanted to ask you, and this is going to come totally off left field, which witch in film is your favorite witch?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to go back to what you just said about women and the representation of using the goddess as a symbol for their own power. And I think a lot of women have done that with Hollywood witches. It's not that they're worshiping, Maleficent or any of these Jillian or anything, but a lot of these movies that tried to put women in their place using the witch or tried to explain power that would then oppress women and then people of other genders as well, as you well pointed out, use these actually did the same thing. They saw them, even though they may have been oppressive in one way, they actually found their power through that. And Hollywood actually began to do that, tap into that in the 90s. During what's often called the girl power movement, and they saw that witchcraft allegorically as a girl's power, and specifically they were marketing to girls, so I'm saying girls in true, but of course all genders were also interested, they were marketing to that, and they saw that. And that's coming through now as well. You see that in the current craft legacy. Interestingly, I don't know if you've seen Owl House, it's a cartoon. Specifically, I don't remember I think they're in the U.S. I think it is a U.S.-based. It's a Disney cartoon. I believe it's on Disney. But the little girl, they're Latino, and I don't know what their specific nationality is. I'm not exactly clear. I've only seen one or two episodes. But that is of interest there. That's one of the diverse representations that is happening right now. But besides all that, what's my favorite witch? I always say the Wizard of Oz. I say Wicked Witch of the West. It's just the easy answer because she's been with me since I was tiny.
So what was that?
Have you seen The Owl House?
No, I haven't seen it. I will have to look it up, and I will have to see how we are represented in a different, you know.
It's a cartoon. It's a cartoon, and I hope I'm saying it. I literally only saw two episodes of it, so I'm not completely clear. I haven't seen the whole series, but the two episodes I saw were adorable. And it's a little girl who doesn't want to. I believe she doesn't want to go to camp where her mom wants her to go, and then she goes and she discovers a witch in another world, and she goes to this other world. It's very cute. I would check that one out. Yes.
I will have to watch that, and I have faith that as diversity is more represented, as you were saying, you know, with the craft, the original craft was a film of its time. I'm a little older,
mm-hmm.
And I even when the craft came out, I was a little older than the demographic that it was intended for. And then when the new one, the Craft Legacy came out, I liked it. because I like that they had a transgender person. I like that they had more ethnicity. But then there were some witches that were really, really upset that it had, like, you know, glitter and this type of stuff. But I think it speaks to their generation, you know, and we will always have the original anyway. It's not going to go anywhere. So why do you think people get so extremely upset about this, like, remakes and reinventions?
You know, it's hard when your heart is just sold on a specific narrative, on visuals that were presented to you in the way a story is told. And it's not only film. It could be a song. It could be a piece of art. If your spirit and your soul were touched by a particular way someone told a story, their voice, their the way they express themselves, whether it's with, like I said, with paint or with a camera, it's hard to make that jump to see it redone. It's really hard because your heart was so addicted to what was done, you know, by the other artist, by the other storyteller. So it's really tough. I mean, and film specifically has a permanence that oral storytelling does not. And so the example I always give is that if anyone right now listening close their eyes when I say the word Cinderella, you're most likely going to think of a blonde-haired girl in a blue dress. Why? Because the permanence of Disney's film in our culture. And similar to the witch, if you say witch, first thing people pop in their head, with the exception of maybe the modern witchcraft community, is green skin and a black pointy hat. So you have this permanence. It's hard for a heart that loves something like that, that are so addicted to it, that are so dependent sort of on it, to take that leap and say, oh, well, let me see it in a different way. It's not easy. So there's that. You know, it's hard to do that. And sometimes it's just not well done, which is another story. But, you know, legacy, craft legacy, like you said, has a lot of things going for it. It was not a remake. It was, you know, it came after. And there were things that worked really well with that film, and it's definitely of its time. It's not going to be the film that the craft was, because the craft came at a very pointed period of time in our culture, specifically when it comes to the representation of witchcraft. You know, it was a very key time that it dropped.
Yeah.
The legacy is not in that time. And the sparkles and the little craft box that they have with the little magical box they open, all that stuff, that's what teenagers are doing now. So it is of its time. And that's the way it is. You know, like you said, it's just what it is.
And it's, you know, it's for the TikTok witches. Disclaimer, I have nothing against TikTok witches. I think everybody has to start their practice somewhere, and it just so happened that the younger generation has that platform, and that's all I'm saying. So you already told us which one is your favorite. So can you tell us which one is your least favorite?
My least favorite. I always this surprises people, and I'll say it's not my least favorite witch film, because there are some really bad films with witches in it that I don't even remember the names of, because I've blocked them. So let's just be, I'm just going to be honest about that. Okay, there's some really, really low-budget witch films that I had to watch for this, to write this book, that were just terrible. So outside of that level, my least favorite popular witch film is actually Hocus Pocus. And people always, like, I can already hear gasps coming through the phone from anybody who might be listening or will be listening eventually, because people love this movie and it's cute. It's okay. It's just not my thing. It's just not a film that, that I love to watch on an enjoyment level, just purely to watch a witch film. But it has its points, and it has a really important role in my study, and I do talk about it. But yeah, it's just, and I think Bette Midler is really fun to watch. She did a fun job, but it's just, that's just not my type of witch film from an enjoyment perspective.
And I think, the good thing about Hollywood is that there are witches for every taste, every color, every size. You know, the witch aesthetic actually is one of the few that is diverse, and we have heavier or bigger sizes witches. We have very tiny witches. We have beautiful witches. We have not so hegemonically beautiful witches. And there is a witch, and there is a witch film for everybody, I think. Will there ever be a Heather Green book on the witches of TV?
Well, this is it. I mean, my book covers television and film. So you'll catch, obviously, the first, it goes chronologically. So the first four chapters, five chapters, like I can't remember exactly now, it's only film because there was no television. Television was not widespread. So starting in 1951, it shows and television. Shows and movies at that point. So from 1951 forward, I talk about television shows, witches in television, as well as witches in film. And it's all America. So everything is American. I don't get into movies and televisions from other countries. It's strictly American, but I talk about Bewitched, Addams Family, Charmed, and so on throughout from 1951 on. So this is the same. This is that book as well.
And that will be the United States of America for those who the America continent.
Yes.
Yeah, because a lot of people were like, okay, so does she talk about like Mexican movies? And no, it's United States of America. Thank you for not getting into the internet. I loathe the, I'm not even going to say the name. I just don't like it. And everybody who is a witch, they're like, oh, do you like the movies and the books? No, they annoy me. I don't like how they talk. I don't understand the movies, and that's why I don't watch them. I'm not going to say the name. But you're a witch. I know you know what I'm talking about. Kind of late to ask you this, but was there a particular film that inspired you? I mean, you already talked about The Wizard of Oz, but was this what sparked the engine to write the book, or what was, if anything in particular, that inspired you to let me do this research and write about witches on film and TV in the United States?
The Wizard of Oz was not the one. I would say it was first, I was first inspired to write this when The Craft came out, and a similar film that's Canadian based called Little Witches. They came out around the same time, I think released the same year. They were very similar, and it was right at the end of the Satanic Panic, and I was like, interesting. And then, of course, you had followed up by Charmed and Buffy the Vampire Slayer with Willow, and I started to notice trends, and so that was what sort of inspired me, noting that there seemed to be trends in the way witches and Wicca were being represented at the time. I didn't write the book at that point. However, it was then in the early 2010s where I noticed that we had an upswing in witch films again. Beautiful Creatures, American Horror Story Coven came out. I'm trying to remember. I think that's when Salem started. A bunch of witches were being represented again. And so that's what sort of said, okay, this is happening again. I got to do this work. I've got to do this study. And so that's sort of the inspiration behind it. Of course, there were other questions. I wanted to know about the green skin. I wanted to know what witches looked like during the silent era. Did they look different? What perpetuated the horror, when did they appear in horror and why? So I started asking more and more questions, but it really, I think what began with noticing these trends in modern films that were going on in the movie theaters at the time.
That is fantastic. Thank you. I am so glad that we have you on the show today, that you did this work, because it really sounds like a very interesting book. And to everybody, please go get it, because it's a wonderful book. I know where to get it, but the audience may not know. So I have to ask you, where can people find Lights, Camera, Witchcraft, A Critical History of Witches in America, Film and Television?
It is going to be officially released on October 8th, so that's just a little over, under 2 weeks, so I'm really excited about that. You can pre-order it, and then eventually, you can pre-order it, and you can, and then buy it from both Llewellyn.com. Llewellyn is the publisher, so right now you can get on their site, and you can pre-order there. You will eventually be able to order it from them directly when it's released. And also, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the other good places, you'll be able to do that. And you can, again, pre-order now and do that. I definitely advise pre-order, not just because it's my book, but also because, you know, slow shipping. We know everybody's waiting for their packages a little longer these days. So if you're eager to watch witch movies during October and want a companion to be the one with the facts, as you're watching the movies, I suggest pre-order so you get it, so you're not waiting quite as long with delivery. And that includes the Day of the Dead book too. Pre-order and order that now so you get it. I gotta plug his book. I'm sorry, it's so good.
It is really good. Yeah, it's very complete. The Llewellyn's little book of Day of the Dead by Jaime Jirones, Yeah, you can hear him. We're going to interview him in English, and he's going to be on this show on October 25th. And wait until I tell him that you pluck his book. Oh, my God, that man is going to die. It's amazing. I love to see how you love each other. That is, like, really nice. You know, it's nice. It's nice.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Well,
you
did a good job, yeah.
Are you going to be doing any other podcasts or presentations or live readings or anything? I mean, I know now with the circumstances, it might not be, releasing of a book like we were used to. But where else are you going to talk about this book?
Well, I'm going to be doing 2 in-person events in Atlanta at Phoenix and Dragon, and the dates and times and dates are on my website, which is heathergreen.net. You said it earlier, and also on my bio on Llewellyn.com. So, and I post about them on my Facebook page as well as Twitter. So I'm going to be doing those 2 live events, Phoenix and Dragon, which is a metaphysical store in Atlanta. I also will be on Spooky Evenings, believe it's October 14th, that's online, talking specifically about TV witches. So you asked about that earlier. I'm going to be doing another event in November, again, online. Most of the stuff is online, and then one in January so far. I think there's a few others, but my mind is running blank on them. So you can any kind of upcoming events that I'm going to be speaking at, most of them are, again, online. Those are and free. Those are going to be listed on my website, on Happenings, or on Llewellyn.com. They post the stuff that's coming up as well.
That is awesome. For everybody to go, please go to Llewellyn, get the book, and follow Heather Green. And that was the suggestion of the century. Pre-order your book, get your popcorn, invented by the Aztecs. sit your butt in front of the screen, watch the movie, read about it. That's your October. That's a must. I'm so glad that you were here to talk about your book right before it comes out from the press. I have to be smug about it. And I also have to give a shout out, to Florence, because she is such a cheerleader. So Florence Edwards Miller, thank you so much for your kind words. I just read what she commented on your post about the show tonight. And thank you so much, Heather, for being on the show today. Thank you for your patience and for all this passion in film and spirituality and feminism and all of the good things that you do. Thank you so much for what you have done for me and how you have helped me enrich the content of this show. I have to say that publicly. And thank you for being here tonight. All I have left to say is I'll leave you the microphone so you can say goodnight to your audience tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time that you've given me here to talk about the book and witches. And I did forget one other event is Desperate House Witches. I have to give them a shout out to another podcast that I'm going to be on, and I left them out sorely earlier, but again, that will be on my list. So let me do that shout out real quick. And otherwise, thank you everyone who came to listen or who will listen to the recording, and to, of course, to Circle Sanctuary, to you, Laura, to Selena, and to everybody there. And I hope that everybody spends October watching witch movies and laughing and having fun and maybe a little jump scares and popcorn, like you said. So thank you so much. I really appreciate this. And happy autumn equinox or spring equinox, I guess, to everyone out there.
Indeed, and thank you, Heather. Thank you, obviously, to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. To everybody who is listening now, please, 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 please tune in October. Every single show is going to be fantastic. And until then, never forget that you are loved. Good night.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.